Choosing where to go to university is a big commitment.
By choosing to study at the University of Central Lancashire, you'll be choosing a place that will support you as you step into your future.
You'll be choosing a new place to call home.
We see our students for who they are and who they can be.
We see opportunity.
We see potential.
We see you.
There's still time to apply for a degree through Clearing.
Visit uclan.ac.uk/clearing to find out more.
Welcome back. It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 116, we discuss ESPN Plus goes Copa crazy and what that means for their competitors, Chris and Kartik's excellent adventure at the FIFA press conference, a US broadcaster picks up the rights to the International Champions Cup, our favourite games of the week, plus letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Now, Kartik, this past week has flown by. There's been so much going on. Just two things, and there's a bunch of other stuff happening too, but two things last week. Last Thursday, we went to the David Beckham press conference at Lockhart Stadium for their hopes of getting that stadium for Inter Miami, the new Major League Soccer team that starts next season. And then Friday, we went to Miami for the press conference for FIFA, where they made some big announcements about the Club World Cup. And they were expected to make a big announcement about Qatar in 2022, increasing the number of teams to 48. But they announced that they're going to be going ahead with a feasibility study to, and they're not quite ready, probably in June they'll be ready to make a make an announcement there. Without going in too in-depth into the Miami, what's your take on the story about Lockhart? Is this good news for Fort Lauderdale? And is this a sign that Miami can't get its act together?
Yeah, I mean, that's consumed my week. I'll admit I haven't watched a lot of soccer. I've been really focused on a lot of soccer because of that story. Is it a good deal for Fort Lauderdale, the city? Probably, yes. Is it a good deal for soccer fans in South Florida? Yes and no. I mean, that's the big question. I think there was a split between how hardcore soccer fans viewed this situation, many wanting an independent team at Lockhart Stadium, and how soccer professionals and city officials who have to look over the city's finances and take the best financial deal possible for the city and the most lucrative deal from a public relations standpoint for the city viewed it. Now, what does it mean about Miami? That is still to be determined. In fact, had we been recording an hour later, I might have had more information on that. So I've got a phone call that I'll be getting some more information on what's going on specifically politically in Miami-Dade County and with the city of Miami, more importantly, in the wake of the Lockhart decision. So the bottom line is Major League Soccer should the city and Inter Miami now they have the green light, negotiate a lease agreement or some sort of agreement about the property in the next few weeks. The MLS club in South Florida will be playing in Fort Lauderdale, much like the last MLS club. And this would be the fifth team in the history of professional soccer in South Florida since the mid-70s that either began playing in Miami or intended to begin playing in Miami and then move north to Fort Lauderdale. So that's a little bit of an underlying theme for people who may not know the area very well and may not know the history and may always wonder why these teams end up in Fort Lauderdale. I've written extensively about it, not at World Soccer Talk, but at other sites. You can just hit Google and look up Lockhart and history and that sort of stuff, or my name and find those articles.
Yeah, my take on this is that Miami, there's a reason that MLS is coming to Lockhart and to Fort Lauderdale, and that's because time's running out. I mean, the stadium is supposed to open, whichever stadium they go to, in March for next season, and Lockhart is their best possibility, and it looks like it's going to be the stadium that they're going to be using, which is good news for soccer fans in South Florida. Bad news for Miami, but Miami's had plenty of chances, plenty of luck, plenty of meetings with city officials and county officials, and have just not been able to make it happen. So It'll be an interesting season next season for us, Kartik.
Yeah, let me also say, just from the city of Miami perspective, Miami has a lot of public assets. Miami has a lot of attractiveness. They don't need necessarily to roll over and give up public land and give up potential park space to a major league sports franchise or a big football club the way Fort Lauderdale. It's not as important in Miami as it would be in Fort Lauderdale. It won't do necessarily as much for the image of the city. So I can't blame the city of Miami. I know a lot of soccer fans have been beating up on them and saying Miami is a corrupt place and this is why they can't get anything done there. No, it's actually because Miami and Miami-Dade County have laws in place that prevent rush deals and public corruption, that it was much easier to get a deal done in Broward County. So I want to push back on some of the stereotypes of Miami that have been thrown out there. As someone who lives in Broward County, much closer to Fort Lauderdale than Miami, it's I guess good for me in terms of being able to go and see Major League Soccer in live in person. But the talk that this is because Miami is an incredibly corrupt place and maybe the politicians want to be bought off, I don't subscribe to that. There, in fact, like I said, because Miami has that reputation, they're overly cautious about these sorts of things. And because they've been burnt by another professional sports franchise, namely the Miami Marlins.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to what we've been watching this past week. Like you said, Kartik, it was an FA Cup weekend anyway, though. But you didn't watch as much. And I watched a fair bit of games, but not as much as I normally do with everything going on. My highlight of the week had to be, oh God, Kartik, Swansea City against Manchester City. As a neutral watching this game, I'm not a neutral, but if I was a neutral, this was an extremely exciting game. You got a plucky championship side playing in the rain against Manchester City, arguably one of the best teams on the planet right now. And Swansea deservedly took a 2-0 lead. And in this game, really entertaining, City fighting back. And City gets their first goal, no problem. Bernardo Silva, completely deserved, brilliant piece of skill. I think hits it with the outside of his boot. And then goals two and goals three for Manchester City were, if there was VAR, and VAR was used in select FA Cup games over the weekend, those games that were where the Premier League club was hosting the game, VAR was used. In all the other games, VAR was not used. And goals two and goals three would have been overruled if VAR was in place. So really, for a Swansea fan, I was demoralized, depressed. It felt like last season for me. It felt like being in the Premier League and watching my team and having my hopes up and almost getting relegated or kicked in the teeth. But at the end of the day, I held my head up high and I was like, okay, this is a really fantastic performance by Swansea. Especially the second goal that they scored, which was classic Man City, tiki-taka, all the way down the pitch. Beautiful goal by Bersan Celina, who used to play for Manchester City. But for me, as a soccer fan, I love this game. This was, from beginning to end, a really classic FA Cup encounter, and Manchester City moves on to the semi-finals of the FA Cup. Kartik, what about you? What was your highlight of the week from all the games you watched?
Yeah, so it would have to be the Hertha Berlin-Dortmund match. That came down to the end. Marco Reus popping up and getting a goal in stoppage time, keeping Dortmund level on points with Bayern, although it seems like every week it's hard work for Dortmund. They're needing to rally and get late goals, whereas Bayern are beating teams 6-0. So that's the split there. The last 2 weeks, Dortmund has needed late heroics to get through against lesser sides. In fact, the previous week it was against a side, Stuttgart, that is probably going to get relegated, and that was at home. This week it was against Hertha Berlin, a mid-table side, whereas Bayern won 6-0, but it was just a thrilling match. Yeah. Every Dortmund game has been exciting. This is both good and bad. It's just defensively the issues that seem to have been sorted out under Lucien Favre have the defensive things going back to Jurgen Klopp's last season, 2014-2015 season. Now they seem to have just reappeared. And while very exciting, and I haven't missed a Dortmund game in a while, it's also edge-of-your-seat stuff and not not the way teams win titles, right? Even though they're scoring lots of late goals, conceding so regularly is a sign of a club that's not going to win a title.
Yeah, and at the same time, Bayern Munich is steamrolling sides 6-0 and yeah. scoring goals plenty. So in terms of the goal difference, it's going up and up and up. The thing about this game, Kartik, the Hertha Berlin game against Dortmund, great commentary by Phil Bonny and Thomas Broek. I watched probably the last 10 minutes of the game. It was probably good timing, really, after the Swansea-Man City game. And just really fantastic commentary, really passion, excitement. Phil Bonny just did a great job of just really pulling the viewer in and just celebrating with them on this fantastic late drama in that match. Just great stuff. As far as some of the other games I watched, watched Leeds United against Sheffield United, a big win there for Sheffield United. Only had one shot on target the whole game, and they scored and win the game 1-0. Burnley-Leicester, we'll also watch Wolves against Man United, NYCFC against LAFC. So this, I was at my brother-in-law's house, and it was on a Sunday afternoon, and my brother-in-law said to me, he said, Chris, let me see what's on television, see if there's any soccer games on, because he probably saw I was a little bit bored. See, I said, yeah, check on FS1. So we switched on NYCFC, LAFC, and honestly, Kartik, I probably watched about 10 seconds of this game, maybe 15 seconds of this game, and I said, no, it's okay, go ahead and just change it back to golf or whatever you were watching, because I can't watch this. I mean, it's to me, it's just a horrible look. I mean, it's bad enough to probably be in the stadium and seeing this pitch that's, I mean, just looks horrible. It's horrible on a good day. It looked absolutely awful, and on television it just looked unappealing. This to me, this is not soccer, Kartik. This is just a really bad look.
Yeah, and you wonder why MLS, we assume, did not want Inter Miami playing at Marlins Park. The pullout of the Marlins Park deal is what predicated this rush or a potential Marlins Park deal or any thought of Marlins Park. There was no Marlins Park deal, excuse me, I wrong word usage there, is what pushed this rush to Lockhart Stadium in Fort Lauderdale. But you have to think, even if the staff at Inter Miami was considering Marlins Park, MLS probably said, no, we can't afford to go through another one of these. It's just a very bad look. Having worked with the NASL, we had multiple teams at one point that were playing on baseball fields or baseball configured stadiums for soccer, and it just never works.
Yeah, that's the thing, though, too. If I'm Major League Soccer and I'm setting up a new team, or, you know, I mean, a team moves to a new stadium, the first thing I look at is, okay, aesthetics. As a soccer fan, I want to watch a soccer game on a grass pitch. I want to watch a game on a real surface where the surface is not going to either favor or not favor the other team. I want it to be a fair, good-looking pitch. I mean, that's not much to ask for, really, but the other match I watched, and this was Cincinnati against Portland later in the day on Sunday, and a great atmosphere in the stadium. I mean, the home first game in MLS, packed stadium, good atmosphere. But again, this is like, I was like looking at the pitch. I'm like, why are they using a rubber pitch, a pitch with those rubber pellets? I mean, why couldn't they put grass in there? Because what happened is as you watch the ball go around the pitch, the ball sometimes would slow down when it shouldn't. Other times, I mean, players would be kicking in midfield and like rubber pellets going everywhere. And the thing is that these rubber pellets, the jury is still out on whether or not these rubber pellets that are being used are a cause or a risk of causing cancer. Because, many of these stadiums that have been used that have these pitches, I think the EU is looking at this too, whether or not to ban them, because there's a concern. There's been different health reports. They say that because a lot of these rubber pitches, or these pitches with rubber pellets, use these pellets from old recycled tires, which contain low concentrations of hazardous and cancer-causing chemicals. So the jury's still out whether or not these are actually even safe for the players. There is a lawsuit out there, I think, from a goalkeeper that was suing because that he got rubber pellets, probably swallowed them in a goal mouth incident. It's not a safe look. But even for the TV viewer, to me, watching this game, I'm like, oh my God, why can't they use grass? Because for me as a viewer, it turns me off. It just changes the whole viewing experience of watching a game. Kartik, anything else you watched this past week that stood out?
No, the same thing. The Cincinnati-Portland game, similar observations about the turf, and that's just general observations about the turf in general. Also have to mention that was another consideration. We keep coming back to this theme for Inter-Miami. Had a lot of back and forth yesterday about FIU and why FIU, which is in Miami-Dade County. I want to stress this to people who, again, don't know the area. FIU Stadium has a Miami address because it is in unincorporated Miami-Dade County, and that is its postal zone. However, it is not in the city of Miami. In fact, it's some people in the city of Miami tell me it's easier to get to Fort Lauderdale than to FIU. I don't know. I don't live in the city of Miami. FIU is closer than Fort Lauderdale is, but again, it's the way traffic is in South Florida. But Inter Miami's Paul McDonough says the reason they never really considered FIU and again went for a deal, went north to Fort Lauderdale to get a deal for a stadium was because of the turf. And that, I guess, may have been a club consideration because it seems like MLS on the macro level doesn't seem to care about that. But McDonough was in Orlando year one and two. They were on turf and moved to grass. And then he was in Atlanta where they have turf. But perhaps he thinks it's a real consideration in terms of signing players. And that's what he indicated.
The other thing, too, about playing on these rubber turf pitches is injuries. Anyone who's played on these pitches can attest to, I mean, these burns that you'll get on these types of pitches. Yes, they're better than what they used to be. But for me, for Inter Miami, I applaud them that if they're looking for a stadium that has a grass pitch, something they can customize to be their own, Lockhart's a perfect match for that. And you look at FIU, which has turf, basically a rubber pitch. You look at Marlins Park, which is a baseball stadium. The only two stadiums that really left are Hard Rock Stadium and Lockhart. And Hard Rock has the Miami Open tennis tournament. They have International Champions Cup. They have the Miami Dolphins. They have the Miami Hurricanes. They have a bunch of other friendlies going on, too. So they would be playing second or third fiddle to the Dolphins, with no guarantee of having exclusivity on when they can actually play the matches. Lockhart, they do. The Lockhart would be theirs to make sure that that's priority number one, making sure that those games are going to be played. So the other thing, Kartik, about Miami, so just I don't want to go into a lot of depth about this, but this was eye-opening to me. So last Friday, we attended the FIFA press conference, and this was a big deal, because there were two major stories that were happening that week. First of all was the U.S. Women's National Team players filing a lawsuit against U.S. Soccer, wanting equal pay. And this was something that came out the Friday before. So it was still a hot topic last week in Miami. And the second thing was that week, more than 100 clubs had signed a letter asking for a discussion, a dialogue with USSF President Carlos Cordero. And that letter was handed or distributed to Gianni Infantino, the FIFA president, as well as all the FIFA members. And that was big news, too, that week. So it was a perfect opportunity to be in Miami to ask the questions. We were in the press conference as members of the media. The two things that were, I guess, illuminating to me. One is that the lack of U.S. soccer media that were there. So ESPN was there. Jeffrey Carlisle was there doing some great, great reporting and investigating there. So too was beIN Sports. Jeremy St. Louis was there doing reports from the press conference. And World Soccer Talk. Other than that, there was no Fox Sports on the English language side. And don't forget that Fox is the FIFA rights holder. So there's big news coming out of Miami that will have an impact on Fox's rights to the Club World Cup in terms of the tournament being expanded. Discussion about 48 teams for Qatar. And you would think that, I don't know, Grant Wall, Fox Soccer news reporter, or somebody would have been there. NBC, I can see. I mean, they don't have a daily news show, so and they're very focused on the Premier League. So, but to me, I was first really shocked about the lack of U.S. soccer media there. Even, you know, Soccer America, Washington Post, Yahoo Sports, you go down the list, I mean, Goal.com, none of them were there. So that was the first thing. The second thing for me, Kartik, that I was, I think you know, I was upset. I was really upset at this. So when it became the time in the press conference to open up questions to the media, you know, if you're interested, you raise your hand, and then the press officer goes ahead and then selects the people that to ask questions. And this was a really interesting thing for me to watch because, yes, okay, they went to the New York Times, they went to the Associated Press, they went to Reuters, et cetera, et cetera. And then they started looking at the other media to see who was wanting to ask a question. I was a person that raised my hand. I got a nod from the FIFA press officer that, okay, yeah, I see you raised your hand. I'll be to you in a few minutes or so. Then there was the CONCACAF press officer who was standing beside me, went ahead and looked at my badge, looked at my name, and then was texting the FIFA press officer. And who knows what he said? I can imagine what he said, but they went ahead and skipped me. And not only did they skip me, they skipped all of U.S. soccer media. ESPN was there, Jeffrey Carlisle raising his hand, wanting to ask a question. They purposely made sure that no members of the press from U.S. soccer media were able to ask questions, which then, I mean, from FIFA's perspective and from the perspective of U.S. soccer, everything's rosy, everything's great, everything's wonderful. There's no hard questions, no tough questions asked about the U.S. women's national team lawsuit or about this letter that has been signed by more than 100 clubs in the United States asking for a dialogue about opening up the system to have possibilities of at least promotion relegation, which is part of FIFA's Article 9. Last but not least, Kartik, you were there, you were beside me. So the press conference ends, Jeffrey Carlisle jumps up, goes over to Carlos Cordero and says, hey, do you have a few minutes? I stand up too, as do you, Kartik, to see if we can get into to ask some questions. And the CONCACAF press officer says, yeah, no problem. And then Carlos Cordero goes out a side door, kind of a back door, which no one's allowed through except for, you mean, the press officers and the members, I mean, FIFA members, etc. He goes out the back door, and then the press officer says, okay, yep, he'll meet you in the lobby. As then Jeffrey Carlisle and ourselves, we go over to the lobby to go ahead and get ready to ask questions. The press officer comes to the lobby and says, oh, I'm sorry, Carlos is gone. And that was it. So there was no opportunities, not one opportunity to ask one question. And to me, it was illuminating and sickening, really, is that this is how press conferences, and I've had the same experience at U.S. men's national team press conferences. I've gotten a lot of criticism. There's been a lot of criticism in the past that U.S. soccer media just ask softball questions. The questions that they ask are not really direct, strong questions. And here's an example of a press conference in our backyard, essentially, with an opportunity to ask some tough questions and get some good answers back to find out what is going on with this lawsuit, what is going on with this letter. And you're cut off. You're blocked. You're basically blackballed, not allowed to actually ask questions. And this goes a long way to showing why U.S. soccer is so protected. They're doing it. You mean they're making sure that this doesn't that the people like me and others don't ask questions, don't ask those tough questions, especially in front of an international audience, in an international media audience, where they may not. I mean, Associated Press and these reporters from the New York Times and from England, etc., may not realize what's going on in the United States. Kartik, anyway, that's my rant for the day. But I was really upset by this.
Yeah, I think that there was also just kind of a disinterest in international governance issues among a lot of U.S. press, which might explain why they didn't come down to Miami for this. In fairness, the budgets are tight, and we just had the She Believes Cup, and now we have two U.S. men's national team matches. We had the opening of the stadium in Cincinnati those sorts of things do take priority among American soccer writers. I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying that's probably not the opening of the stadium in Cincinnati. Sorry, they don't have their new stadium yet, but their first MLS home match, which was at Nippert Stadium on the campus of the University of Cincinnati. So I think those are probably the considerations. Now, interestingly enough, she believes one of the matches, U.S. matches, was in Florida, and so is this upcoming U.S. friendly against Ecuador. But they weren't able to kind of swing three trips to Florida, I guess, for a lot of these folks.
But this is probably the first time FIFA's ever met in the United States for a meeting. You know, this is a historic occasion. I mean, in my 14 years of covering soccer in the United States, FIFA never came to this country in that time. Usually they would go to the Bahamas for most of the meetings under Blatter in this region. So it's a big deal. And to me, I mean, the U.S.-Ecuador game that's coming up and the other U.S. women's national team and men's national team friendlies, you can almost guarantee that there'll probably be, 50 to 100 members of the media there. Sometimes probably, say, Gold.com as one example, or Fox Soccer. They might have three or four people there. So to me, it's like, okay, how about sending one of those people, instead of sending them to the U.S. men's national team men's or women's, send that one person to Miami. Have them report on this. I was just flabbergasted, Kartik. Maybe I shouldn't have been surprised by this, but I was really upset by this. I mean, it's par for the course. I mean, this has been time after time where we've been blocked from asking questions, and it is what it is. And I will keep on asking those questions, or trying to ask those questions. But I wanted to share the story just to let listeners know, because oftentimes on Twitter, people are complaining and saying, like, the U.S. soccer media is soft. Part of it is that we don't have the access. Part of it is that Carlos Cordero doesn't make himself available for press conferences, even to a telephone press conference. Not as much as other presidents of other countries that do it quite often. So it's not a good relationship overall between the media and U.S. soccer. And here's a perfect example of that, of CONCACAF going in. It's not even the U.S. soccer press officer. It was the CONCACAF press officer going in and blocking, preventing us from asking questions. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, World Soccer Talk is reporting, or has reported, that ESPN Plus has acquired the rights for the Copa America in the United States in English and in Portuguese. Remember, the Spanish language rights have gone elsewhere. So that was that we reported on Wednesday, as I think back this week, and pretty significant that, again, more and more properties seem to be falling behind that OTT paywall with ESPN Plus. However, have to stress this once again, Chris, ESPN Plus is significantly more accessible in terms of price than most other OTT services.
Yeah, so the Spanish language rights to Copa America still is with Telemundo, and then the Portuguese and English language rights on ESPN Plus. This is huge news because, ESPN Plus is leaving the competition behind in the dust. You look at, say, DAZN, which even 2 months ago, 3 months ago, we had high hopes. We thought, okay, DAZN's going to come into the U.S. market pretty strong on the soccer side. And we understood that they were actively trying to acquire soccer rights, even from current rights holders, asking them, hey, do you have some excess inventory, is what they call it. You mean some games that maybe you don't mind kind of sublicensing to DAZN. That hasn't happened, and DAZN, the feedback we've gotten just even in the last couple of podcasts, has been disappointing, whether it's the J-League or the AFC Champions League. They're not showing all the games. They're only showing a small selection of the games. So, I mean, they're definitely all in on MMA and UFC and boxing and kind of those types of sports. But soccer, it's been disappointing. But you look at elsewhere, too. I mean, ESPN Plus is by far... I mean, for $4.99 a month, it's crazy. I mean, in terms of all the content that they have, and you still get people, and I can't believe this, you still get people complaining, though, like, I'm not going to subscribe to that. That's, why should I have to pay for that? Well, you're paying for it because you have access now, if you want to pay for it, you have access now to a ton of competitions and leagues and games that you would never have had on television. And that's the thing, too, with this summer. You've got Copa America happening from June to July. You've got the Women's World Cup. You've got the Gold Cup. All three competitions happening at the same time. All three competitions having their final on the last day of their tournaments on the same day. So the likelihood that this game would have been put on television is extremely unlikely, just because there's so much competition, so many things happening at the same time. Now, if you're a fan of Copa America or you want to watch the best of South American soccer from Brazil, Colombia, Argentina, etc., ESPN Plus is the way to go. I mean, you get all these games in English language. To me, it's a no-brainer, in addition to all the other coverage that they have. The interesting thing for me, Kartik, is what about Fox? I mean, just to think, it wasn't that long ago that Fox had the rights to the Premier League, Champions League, Bundesliga, Serie A, Copa America, Copa Libertadores, and several other competitions. And I can't even remember the last time that Fox has acquired any new soccer TV rights or soccer rights other than the World Cup, which they won the bid for in 2011, and the Bundesliga, which they won the bid for in 2013. And that was a global deal. That really wasn't a U.S. deal specifically. So it's been 6 years since Fox has acquired any new rights. And to me, it just seems that they've kind of pretty much given up on the soccer side of things, other than the big World Cups. Of course, we've got the Gold Cup. We'll have to see what the level of production and quality and commitment is this summer. But to me, they've pretty much given up, other than the FIFA tournaments. Last but not least about this, Kartik, is price concerns. There's a lot of people that have been posting on social media and other places saying, okay, this is great about ESPN Plus getting Copa America in English and Portuguese, but how long is it going to be before they change the price from $4.99 to, I don't know, $29.99 a month? Which, even at $29.99 a month, you could argue there's enough content there, enough value to make that price point worthwhile. And I'm just hypothetically throwing out $29.99. When we interviewed one of the executives from ESPN who heads up the ESPN Plus back in October, I believe it was, or September actually, we asked about the price, and they said that there's no plans anytime in the near future to increase the price. What they're doing right now is they have 2 million subscribers to ESPN Plus. They are actively trying to just sign up as many people as possible. And maybe down the road, maybe then they'll increase it slightly. But at this point in time, they are losing money. They're acquiring rights. They are acquiring subscribers. They're losing money on purpose to make sure that they acquire these customers, subscribers, and then down the road, maybe slightly increase the price and see how it goes from there. All right, Kartik, next up in the news segment, speaking of ESPN, is that they've extended their deal with the International Champions Cup through 2021. So ESPN and ESPN Deportes will each televise 15 matches per year in the U.S., while ESPN Plus will exclusively show up to 10 live games in both English and Spanish during the summer. The agreement grants ESPN exclusive English and Spanish language rights to a total of 25 matches, including the annual ICC tournament and various club friendlies each summer in the U.S. through 2021. And this week so far, I think ICC has announced that three clubs coming to the United States for the tour. They will announce more next week, but it's Manchester United, AC Milan, and Benfica. And we'll find out next Tuesday who the other teams are competing in this tournament.
Yeah, moving on, an article this week in Reuters, which was really fascinating to me, Chris, given what we went through at the FIFA conference with the Club World Cup. Javier Tebas, who's, of course, the head of La Liga, has slammed UEFA and their catastrophic proposals, as he calls it, to move some Champions League games to weekends and potentially interfere with the domestic league's calendar. And has welcomed the FIFA plans for the World Club Cup, which is something the European Club Association has not welcomed and has pushed back on. And we also can say from this article that Tebas seems to be bothered that the ECA, European Club Association, which represents several Spanish clubs, the big ones, including Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atleti, etc., have been negotiating in private with UEFA about Champions League and about the Club World Cup. So maybe some cracks in the unified European front against FIFA's plans.
All right, so let's move on to TV ratings. And first up, a couple of ratings that came out from Univision. One is that the Chivas against Club America game, the Clásico, Super Clásico, last Saturday had averaged 1.5 million total viewers and making it the highest rated soccer match across any network in the United States in 2019 thus far. In the UEFA Champions League, the Juventus against Atleti game, this one, let me look at the number, was 525,000 viewers. Barca against Lyon in the Champions League 2, this one had, let me see, 562,000 viewers there. Now, looking at some of the English language games, we had, speaking of the Champions League, we had Juventus against Atleti on TNT, 408,000 viewers for that one. And then Bayern Munich against Liverpool on TNT, 454,000 viewers. The Premier League, there were select games this past weekend because we had the FA Cup. The FA Cup numbers we don't get because they're on ESPN Plus and they don't share those numbers. But Everton against Chelsea, 479,000 viewers. Fulham against Liverpool, 476,000 viewers. And Burnley against Leicester, 325,000 viewers. Now, Kartik, we talked about Major League Soccer in the opening segment, talking about not a good look on television for the pitches that they're playing on. And NYCFC, at this point, have no other option. I mean, they're actively trying to get to a different stadium. Cincinnati, temporarily using the stadium until their stadium's ready. But the TV viewers, the TV viewing numbers reflect that in a way. I don't think that's the reason that the main reason that people are not watching these games, but it's definitely one of the factors. So the Cincinnati Portland game, this is the first game for Cincinnati at home. A lot of people tuning in into this one to see what Cincinnati is all about. 178,000 viewers. NYC FC against LAFC, two of the biggest TV markets in the country. And this one on FS1 was 140,000 viewers. So, I mean, there's not much more to say about this, Kartik. It's just it's continually bad numbers for Major League Soccer on FS1, under 200,000. These games are coming up. I mean, it's on Sundays, I mean, basically from 3 to 5. They had a doubleheader, 3 to 5 p.m. for the NYCFC game, and then 5 to 7 for the Cincinnati game. So not good numbers there. Listener mailbag. First up is Nuke. And Nuke says, I agree with the fan, Chris, from your pod last week. We've had season tickets to NYCFC games. Awesome seats. Expensive seats. Free buffet. MLS is boring 9 times out of 10 games. I honestly would rather watch Manchester United versus Wolves in the FA Cup if it came down to it. Doug Turner says, is there a reason why MLS and USL don't do midweek fixtures? I'd like to watch as many games as I can, but the nature of spoiling all the games during the broadcast kills replay value, and since they're all lumped together on the weekend, it's tough to find time to get to many of them before a talking head gives the scoreline away. What's your take on this one, Kartik?
I think that that's pretty interesting. You know, the thing that you have to understand, though, is that because MLS is shortening their season this year, they will have more midweek fixtures. So maybe, Doug, your question would have been really appropriate last season. Let's revisit this in about 6 months and see how it does, because there will be a clutter of midweek fixtures coming up. Because they've shortened the season and it's also a Gold Cup year, and the Gold Cup is a tournament where I believe Major League Soccer probably sends more players than any other league, maybe Liga MX, but probably Major League Soccer. So good question. It was a perfect question a year ago. MLS has actually somewhat addressed that.
Yeah, so just wait and see on that one. It'll be coming up pretty soon, some of those midweek fixtures, especially as the season goes on. Brian Battle says, does MLS and Fox use flex scheduling to choose featured matches like the NFL does? Also, do you think MLS primetime kickoff times are meant to favor with teams that have TV broadcasts versus web-only deals? So yes, MLS and Fox, really MLS, does use flex scheduling. to really feature kind of what they think will be the games, kind of more the higher profile games or the teams featuring the big teams on a Sunday, for example, whether it's in the afternoon or prime time in the evenings. Like, for example, for the 2019 season, this season, there are not many Columbus Crew games. There are not many Colorado Rapids games. And there's a reason for that. MLS is, I mean, looking at the schedule with Fox and other broadcasters and cherry-picking the games that they think will get the most number of viewers. The NYCFC, they've been pushing for years, and it's still not happening as far as TV viewers, even though New York is the number one TV market in the country. So that's the first part of your question, Brian. Second part is, do you think that MLS primetime kickoffs are meant to favor teams that have TV broadcasts versus web-only deals? What do you think about this one, Kartik? This is a good question.
Yeah. It's one of those things where MLS has tried the last, I'm trying to think how many weeks, 2 weeks of the season, because the fixtures are played at the same time those last 2 weeks, to then pick a nationally televised game out of that lump of fixtures, which is the most important game of the weekend, or you know, one and one for FS1 and ESPN. Although they don't like to, they're not going to go head to head, right? So that's mm-hmm. So it's basically one match that's highlighted. Yeah, it might work, but then at the same time, you have to remember, unlike the NFL, which operates largely on TV and sponsorship revenue, the number one driver for MLS is ticket revenue. If you set a published time of a game, or if a game is TBD, and then you ship the game, now college football, all the games ship, because every game seems to be on television, and you find out 6 days in advance when the game is, and those stadiums still fill up. But MLS is a little different. They depend on ticket revenue, and it's very difficult. And this has been my experience also with the lower divisions. Very difficult when you publish a start time at the beginning of the season with the kind of fans we have that buy tickets for soccer in this country to change the time of the match and play it at a different time for television. So that's just the reality of the fan base. MLS has tried some of it, and there's been pushback.
Luke Christopher says, love the pod. I have a TV background, so I can totally nerd out. Shame I'm not in the 305 Miami-Dade anymore. I could have grabbed a pint at Chaplin's or Playwright. By the way, you can watch Sky Footy legally on YouTube. So yeah, they have a Sky Sports YouTube channel. It's not live, but they have most of the segments on there. So you mean as far as their analysis or anything interesting that comes out, any interviews they've done, you can watch that. They also have Sky News, which is live on YouTube. It streams there. But whenever it comes to the sports segment, they go ahead and they don't play that live segment. They usually have something on tape that they show during those times, like a 5-minute time. Reason being is that even though the Sky Sports has the rights to the games in the UK, they don't have rights to globally to those games, whichever highlights they show. Blockchain D says, if Arsenal or Chelsea were to finish top four and then win the Europa League, would the fifth team in the Premier League get the Champions League spot? Kartik, this is a riddle. I'm not sure if you know the answer to this one.
And I believe the answer is no now. It used to be yes. I think that rule has changed. I am not positive. You know, they keep changing things. Now they have four automatic qualifiers. You don't have the qualifying round. So, yeah, I actually don't know the answer, but I believe it's no.
Carl McClure says, on Sky Sports News, for every EFL championship highlight, it was written on the screen, pictures from ESPN Plus. Despite the fact that we only get one match per day on days of matches, this makes me even more so want championship games on ESPN Plus. So to answer the first part of the question, to mention something, Kyle, is we probably get about four games a weekend, sometimes, well, probably three to five championship games a weekend. There's usually one on Friday, two on Saturday, sometimes one to two on Sundays. And if you're lucky, sometimes on a Monday, but it's very rare on a Monday. So roughly 3 to 4, sometimes 5 if you're lucky, championship games on the ESPN Plus. There's actually a lot of coverage that we do get through ESPN Plus for the championship. But that is interesting, Karthik, about Kyle mentioning that when they do show highlights of the EFL championship, they're getting the actual clips from ESPN Plus.
Yes. Yes, and it says BAMTech ESPN Plus in the corner on the highlights.
Hmm. All right, next up is Raymond Dorosco. He says, when it comes to the CONCACAF Champions League, people talk about the timing and the wage disparity between Liga MX and MLS, but I believe the bigger talking points, do you believe that American investors will ever invest into sports franchises without seeing high profitable returns? I don't know. I think the whole question about Major League Soccer and how much money these owners are actually making, it's a black box. It's one of those things that if you ask Don Garber, you know, how's MLS doing monetarily wise, when it becomes time for like CBA negotiations, it's like we're losing money. It's maybe one or two teams are profitable. Everyone else is losing money. The reality is with all these expansion fees coming in and all these sponsorship deals coming in, attendance doing well, I'm sure most of the clubs are making money. How much money? We don't know, but it's a black box. So to answer Raymond's question, some of these teams in Major League Soccer maybe more profitable than teams in Liga MX, especially if Liga MX teams are actually spending a lot more money in the transfer market. The other thing too about the transfer market, the way that MLS is set up with a single entity, is that it kind of the actual transfer fees, you mean, it brings those down a little bit. What's your take on this, Karthik?
I think that we've seen American owners in general are some of the worst owners in European football. I there are exceptions, but I don't think I think the profit motive is what drives a lot of Americans or investor protection, risk mitigation. I'm not sure that's necessarily the case with the biggest investors from abroad. I'm not sure. Now, on the CONCACAF Champions League, I think there are multiple factors for MLS's failures in that competition. But once again, I have to stress, I think the gap is not that large. I just think that there are certain things that MLS teams are not getting. And the biggest thing is the limits in depth due to league rules and the limits in when you can train due to the CBA. And those two things can be addressed, I think, relatively easily and make MLS far more competitive in CONCACAF Champions League on par with Liga MX. And that has nothing to do with some of this external stuff. So I think there are actually pretty easy fixes for it, but they haven't been done.
Last but not least, the last question is, or actually this is more of kind of a FYI, is from John Average Geek. He says, the Flow Sports DC United deal, it's the first time that DC United is getting money for its rights. I don't mind DC United going over the top and having games streamed, but I think the price points and an unproven partner are my big issues. So yeah, it's... we talked about last week, I think, the Cincinnati deal with Flow Sports. I think it's $150 a year to be able to access their games, their home games there.
Yeah, unless you're a season ticket holder in D.C., then you can pay $70. So, yeah, it's $150 if you're not.
Yeah, but even at $70 a deal, that's a lot of money. And then on top of that, too, you have a streaming service that has, very low quality, and like John says, they're an unproven partner. So this deal, I think I guessed it last week. I said they're going to this deal because they're getting more money. Flow Sports is offering more money than the local TV company is, and John points that out to be true. So, and that's the thing about distribution. You don't always want to go to the people that are offering the most amount of money. You want to go to what's best for you. You could say La Liga. You could argue that La Liga probably back in the day, back in like what, about 5 years ago, when beIN Sports acquired the rights, beIN Sports, I'm sure, was offering the most amount of money. La Liga went with that deal thinking, okay, this is the best route for us. in hindsight, depending on who else was offering money at the, at that time, it may have been better for them to go with somebody that was offering less money but greater distribution and greater opportunities to have these games on over their television. We don't know, but I'm sure that'll be coming up in, into the conversations in the next 12 months when La Liga rights start the bidding for that. So listeners, you can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. We'd love to get your feedback, and we really appreciate any questions or rants or raves or feedback that you have. So listeners, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And Kartik, heading into a weekend of international break games, you got the Euro 2020 qualifiers, you got friendlies, you got the Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers, etc. What should you do?
Enjoy your football.